lady bears over there. Stop that.
What Dumbumba?
Speak to them, Humbula Balumla.
What Dumbumba?
What's wrong?
What Dumbumba Simati?
What? That's ridiculous. It's just a superstition.
What Dumbumba Simati Takari?
We must go on. We're so close.
What Dumbumba Simati Takari?
Darling?
Yes, darling.
I'm afraid that the chaps are
dead.
こちらは ABC 食事放送です。 We'll be back in half an hour without Tony Baldwin, Kevin Daly, Angela Weber, Jim McKay, Peter Whitford, Adam Bowen, Lance Curtis, Drew Forsythe, Peter Smalley と Keith Scott。 Music は Conway's Carnival と Willie All Stars。 Special Guest は Jeff Watson と Warren Williams 様。 今我々は Slightly Out Lunch でございます。
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for, the part of our show when we spotlight Australia's greatest stand-up comics! Yes! Live from the Sheepdip Club at Willawalla Bangalong, incisive, hard-hitting, no-holds-barred satire, merciless social comment, yes, fresh from his ABC television late-night triumph, it's your own, Frank Filth!
Good eye!
Bottom.
Barrett! Clunas Maximus! Sharp, rear end! Cinnabon! wait for it! Seat! And the biggie! Bam!
This is Jeff Watson with Towards 1500, and I'm standing in the workshop of a Mainz inventor, Johann Gutenberg. And the noise you can hear in the background is his latest invention, the printing press. This strange, ungainly machine looks more like a Roman wine press than a sophisticated piece of 15th century technology. Mr. Gutenberg, what exactly do you print on your machine?
T-shirts.
What?
You know, T-shirts with funny sayings on them. Like this one, which is probably our most popular line. My parents went to Dusseldorf and all I got was this lousy T-shirt. Pretty cute, eh? Or this one. Bull shirt.
Is that all?
No. The amazing thing about the printing press is its versatility. Anything man can dream up, this little baby can print. Bus tickets, income tax forms, advertising leaflets, menus. The only limit is your imagination.
Have you thought about books or newspapers?
What?
You know, portable written or printed works, filling a number of sheets fastened together, usually sewn or pasted hinge-wise.
Oh, then. No, mate, it's not worth it. If I was to do that, I'd have the International Guild of Amalgamated Scribes and Town Criers on me back. Nah. Besides, there's no money in it.
I would have thought that books and newspapers would be very lucrative.
Lucrative? Don't tell me what's lucrative, mate. I've just invented printed money.
But what of the common man? What does printing mean to the ordinary peasant in the street?
Well, not much, really. I can't see as how it'll affect me being literate and all. A couple of the lads were just talking about it down in the Groton Strumpet, and they reckon there'll be no special editions of Chaucer and Piers Plowman for the working man. Bloody waste of time, if you ask me. I mean, Chaucer's essentially an oral tradition, isn't he? Like Homer. And his alliterative meter and Anglo-Saxon cadences would be lost in print. Besides, they'll never fit Canterbury Tales on a T-shirt.
Well, there it is, the printing press. A technological marvel that will change the course of civilization, or just a tarted-up grape crusher. Only time will tell. Tune in again to Towards 1500 next week, when we'll present another special report, The Black Death, and Is It a Health Hazard? See you next week.
Yes, and we'll make this the dining room, eh? Knock out this wall and put some French doors opening onto the patio.
Oh, yes. I see it as sort of beigey with a floral motif.
Yes. Hmm. We can bring in that antique cedar table we picked up.
And the Navajo wall hanging.
Yes. This'll have to go, of course.
Put me down!
Now, Gran, don't be difficult. You know you clash with our furniture.
I've lived here 60 years and I'm not going to move now.
Be reasonable, darling. We all have to make sacrifices.
Gran, you just don't go with a modern, comfortable living environment.
But I've got nowhere else to stay.
Nonsense. You can go and live at David's house.
Yes, it's Federation style, and so are you.
I don't like it there. It's gloomy and windy.
So are you.
Oh, you're not making this any easier, John.
Well, what about her? Can you imagine having Matthew and Jackie over after the theatre and your grandmother sits in front of the fire knitting the last in her endless line of brown cardigans, pouring cups of land chew down her throat? And muttering about what a nice man John Curtin was and how he once hailed her a cab outside the old Hotel Metropole and isn't it a pity they had to pull it down?
Well, it's not her fault if she's a bit old-fashioned.
Well, what do you expect me to do about it?
Well, isn't there some way we could, I don't know, renovate her?
What did you have in mind?
New dress, I suppose, and teeth, and do something with the hair.
Japanese is very in.
Why not? Kimono, a black wig.
We could mount her on that big cane chair.
I don't like Japanese.
I wonder, would there be some way to sandblast her back to the original?
In fact, welcome to our next guest, as some would say, one of our most distinguished elder statesmen, and not only a politician, but in fact a man about town, a tycoon, and not many people know this, a musician and singer, and of course I mean Sir Horace Tuckerbuck.
Hello, Brian. I mean, Mike. Hello, viewers. So glad I could find the time to give you the benefit of my long experience and wisdom.
That's, in fact, a great privilege and honour to have you with us. I understand that you yourself were actually, in fact, on the last boat out of Singapore when the Japanese invaded.
No. No, I was... I feel that's a scandalous misinterpretation. Geraldine, I was the first man on the first boat. I knew where my duty lay, and it was in Canberra with Johnny Curtin, not freeloading in the pampered palm fronds of the Raffles Hotel.
So you came back, and I suppose that then came the most exciting and the most important time of your life, when you were made Federal Minister for Austral-American Affairs and Racing.
Well, yes, our headquarters was right at the heart of the problem in Sydney's King's Cross. Now, I've never been a wowser, and we pioneered the mass employment of women. A quarter of a century before Germaine Greer, and might I say Prakash, without false modesty, that the inspiring results of our work can be seen even today in that inner suburb, the metropolis.
That's amazing. And that led, I suppose, to your reorganisation of Sydney's finest.
I've always found the police most agreeable chappies. They're very poorly paid, and I think that if you can supply these splendid fellows with a few creature comforts that they might otherwise miss, and it would be very wrong not to, it keeps morale high, it adds moral fibre. And I'm very glad to have been associated with a scheme to induct retired and deserving officers of the law into a private enterprise in a small way, importing oriental herbal remedies or something, I forget quite what, but I remember it's very profitable. And if capital isn't injected into the economy, well, we've all had it, haven't we? And I must say that that's, of course, been in conjunction with my lifelong commitment to the industrious dockside labour force in Melbourne.
Well, your kind heart, Sir Horace, is known to everybody. We'll be back in just a moment to hear some more of your great wit after this short break.
Excuse me, is this the job centre?
What's it to you, pal?
Well, I've come here hoping I might get a job.
Yeah, I'll give you one, pal.
Oh, what?
If you're looking for employment, don't go to your local job centre. They'll just job you.
Come outside and say that.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, came a story of good against evil, of wholesome schmaltz against heartless cynicism. Imperial Echo! In episode 19, we left Wimp Jaywalker struggling with his ancestry, unaware that Princess Starwine is his sister, or that she has a drinking problem. We join her and her droid hairdresser's real O in a speeding starship.
Mix me another Manhattan droid.
I regret, Princess, it is against my programming to encourage drug addiction of any kind. Can I pour you a Venusian mineral water?
No, you limp-wristed heap of tin. Give me the bloody bottle.
Very well, though I'm sure Master Wimp would disapprove.
Listen, droid. It's none of Wimp's business what I do.
Oh, dear, life was less complicated somehow when I was loaned to that fat Queensland politician on Earth who ate the cane toads.
Hello? Oh, bleeding asteroids. It's an obscene phone call.
Might I suggest, Princess, that we could ascertain the identity of the nuisance caller by putting the call up on the screen?
Oh, it's one of those tacky plastic freaks. Look at the bastard. Coal scuttle helmet, black PVC cape, and a dog muzzle. Ah, how perverted can you get?
Can Princess Starwine put an end to the intergalactic nuisance calls? Don't miss the next knee-trembling episode of Imperial Echoes.
And now it's time for our weekly Pets Corner with our regular veterinary consultant, Bruce Losis. Welcome, Bruce.
Hello, nice to be with you again, and as usual I'm speaking to you from my surgery here at the clinic in Drainage Hills, and this week's letter comes from Jeremy Shoulder of Grimewidge. That's out where they make all the cars in those big factories, isn't it, Jeremy? And you write, Dear Bruce, my budgerigar keeps having sneezing fits and falling off his perch. I keep him in a clean cage away from drafts and cooking smells, and he has a nice view out the window, but he still gets terrible attacks of sneezing. Why? I would like to ask you, though, how you came to the conclusion that your bird was sneezing. Budgerigars have a chirp, usually, but I don't think I've ever heard one sneeze. In fact, Jeremy, what I think you've got in the cage isn't a budgerigar at all. What you've got in there is some sort of rodent, I'd say, that someone sold you as a budgerigar by disguising it in a crude but effective costume of feathers, beak, etc. And the reason the animal keeps sneezing and falling off its perch is a combination of two things. First, frustration. It doesn't like being treated as a bird with people like your sister. For example, coming up to the cage and making repulsive kissing noises in that irritating way of hers. Secondly, that view out the window is hideously depressing, Jeremy, even for a human being, let alone a rodent in an uncomfortable disguise. All those rows of chimneys and great stretches of dull metal roof and an atmosphere of frightful industrial tedium. Gee, it's enough to make you contemplate suicide, I would have thought, and The first symptom of this, as I'm sure you know, is violent bouts of sneezing, followed by hysterical fainting, which is exactly what's happening here. I would suggest removing the silly disguise for a start, Jeremy, and taking the cage away from the window. If the sneezing continues, I can only assume that it's motivated by repressed hatred of your aggravating sister. And if so, what you need is an animal psychiatrist for regular therapy and a set of leg irons to keep your sister in her room. I certainly hope my advice has helped you, Jeremy, and now this is Bruce Lassus saying goodbye till next time, and do try to remember, animal instinct is a thing we shouldn't try to deny.
Do you remember, way back, when you were just a kid, how great-granddad took you on his knee and told you how he ran barefoot all the way to town to warn the troopers where the Kelly gang was hiding out? Remember in the 50s when Uncle Charlie called the cops because he heard Joe Tchaikovsky talking Russian to his old mother next door?
All right, into the wagon, you filthy comrades!
And how could you forget the time in the 1960s when your sister Marge was hiding that American draft dodger in the garden shed? And your big brother Wayne phoned the American embassy.
Thanks, buddy. We'll be right over. Say, do you take cash or a check?
Well, now it's your turn to do your bit for Australia in 1984.
Football, meat pies, kangaroos and panel vans.
If your husband uses expressions like, she'll be right, mate, and she's a little ripper, he could be suffering from an unfashionable level of overt sexism. Does your old dad leave half his spaghetti on his plate? Well, you know, that could be the first telltale sign of unacceptable crypto-racism.
Hello, Dad. Eat your dinner.
You wouldn't make me eat worms, would you? I'd sooner eat a snake. Look what happened when your mum had the cane toe.
If you're really concerned about wrong thinking among your family and friends, just call us on this number. We'll send round a couple of our friendly thought officers in a plain van with tranquilizers and a straitjacket.
Job a bit for Australia. Job a bit for Australia. Job a bit for Australia. No!
Jobbing in your mates. A great Australian tradition.
Daddy, what is sex?
Well, it's the birds and the bees. When Mummy Bunny and Daddy Bunny want another little bunny, they ask your mother.
Johnny down the street said it's what you do with Mrs. Jones next door when Mummy's out.
What did you say?
Playing in the street with Johnny, and he told me you and Trevor's mummy did sex together.
Well, what a silly little boy. I wonder where he got that silly idea from.
That's what I said. I said he was silly.
Good boy. Run along and play now.
So we went into the back garden and watched through the curtains.
You did what?
Johnny showed me how to watch through a gap in the curtains.
Johnny's a very bad boy.
Yes. He's not the only one, is he, Daddy?
What do you mean?
Trevor's a bad boy because he watched as well.
You're all very bad boys. What could you see?
We could see you wrestling with Mrs. Jones. Is that what sex is? Wrestling? Is it like wrestling, Daddy? Is it like wrestling?
Yes, it's like wrestling.
Did you win, Daddy?
Did I what?
It looked like you were winning.
Run along and play.
We counted to three lots of times, and Mrs. Jones didn't get her shoulders off the top at once.
Daddy's reading his paper.
Johnny said you're the best wrestler he's ever seen.
Look, Daddy's getting very angry. Now, why don't you run along and play now?
I haven't got any toys.
You've got lots of toys.
What I'd really like to play with is one of those computer games like we saw last week in the shops.
I told you before, Daddy can't afford one of those expensive computer games. Now off you go.
Daddy, does Mummy know you wrestle with Mrs. Jones?
No, no, Mummy doesn't know. We'll keep it our little secret, shall we?
That depends.
Depends on what?
On whether you get me one of those computer games like we saw in the shop.
But that's blackmail.
Is that? What is blackmail, Daddy?
Well, that's when one person uses emotional leverage to get what they want from the other person.
Oh, that's funny. That's what Mummy said sex was.
Mightier than King Kong, meaner than Godzilla, and more vicious than Skippy. It came from Witchy Mootha. In its diabolical quest for a way to turn wool into polyester, the CSIRO has accidentally created a monster, a giant sheep 50 stories tall. The mutant merino has escaped from captivity at Widgie Mootha and is rampaging through Perth. Immediately, a call goes out to the state emergency services.
Our state emergency services here. No crisis too big or small. Is Terry speaking? Yep. Oh, yeah. Right. Right. Just hang on a tick. Hey, Ralph, can we do a rust job on a large merino? It's got into a spot of bother on the Fremantle Expressway. It's eating it.
A local model or one of those Japanese jobs?
No, local. Sounds like an 83 merino with twin overhead mandibles. He wants it done right away.
Oh, no, it's not a chance. You know what it's like this time of year. We're up to our ears in the fruit flies and we haven't even looked at the starlings yet. Tell them to call back after Christmas, will you?
Oh, you're sorry, mate, but we're flat out with rampaging livestock at the moment and the giant sheep is just out of the question. We could give you a nice discount on a cyclone, but...
As darkness descends on the besieged city, one light burns fearlessly through the encroaching gloom. It's the office of our hero, Jason Furbish, ace reporter for the Fresh Fish Daily, who's working round the clock to keep his loyal readers informed about the city's devastation and the latest bingo results. For once, his editor is impressed.
That's a good story, Furbish. I particularly like the way you tie in the giant sheep with the America's Cup, the search for a cure for cancer, Prince William and the Senegalese ice hockey team. Yeah, that's real crass.
Don't you mean class, Chief?
I know what I said. But there's one thing you left out. The monster doesn't have a name.
I didn't know it had one.
It doesn't, Furbish. We give it one.
Why?
Because all monsters have got names. King Kong, Godzilla, Jaws, Malcolm, all the big ones. It's what gives them that aura of fear. And it's what's helped us sell newspapers.
You're right, Chief. We need a name that will strike terror in the heart of every Australian. A name that will evoke images of chaos and destruction. A name that will ring with infamy throughout the ages yet to come.
That's it, Furbish. That's it.
A name like... Jeffrey!
Well, now, there's a name to frighten the children with. But will the giant sheep take to it? Or would it prefer something more macho, like Dolores? Tune in again for the next exciting episode of It Came From Widgie Mootha.
Welcome back to our amazingly interesting chat with Sir Horace Tuckerbox. While you've been away, Sir Horace has been telling us how he swam the Matterhorn, tamed the Amazon, and went into Afghanistan disguised as a nun. But Sir Horace, you were just telling me something that your dad always said. Tell everybody about it.
Well, you're right, Bruce. Dad always said, Horace, you're an Australian, and therefore you've won first prize in the lottery of life. And, in fact, I've always been involved with lotteries, the TAB, Lotto, Opera House Lottery, which has brought so much culture from the old world to our new and vibrant nation.
But, of course, it's since your retirement from day-to-day politics that you've been able to take a deeper interest in the arts.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Well, what I would like you to do, if you'd be so good, Sir Horace, if you'd give us a little bit of your singing.
I'd be honoured.
A great reminder of those great parties you held for the league's clubs, sporting identities in years gone by.
Well, good on you, Mike. Here's a track from my album, and you can get it, I should remind you, for $8.99 from all major dealers. Sir Horace Tuckerbox beats the full bench with my backing group, the Nugan Hand Chorale. This is my own composition, The Punter's Lament.
singing Turralloy, Turralloy at a day. Singing Turralloy, Turralloy, I. Singing Turralloy, Turralloy at a day. For we're bound for a stretch in Long Bay. Oh, farewell to old Randwick and Flemington. Farewell to old Thailand as well. Farewell, Mr. Asia and Griffith. 'Cause I'm going down for a spell. Oh, I once had a ticket to Rio, to De Niro, don't you know? Fake passports from 10 different lands. But some galah went and shopped me to ASIO. And I fell slap bang into their hands.
Here's a ducker box. We can help you, man. You've got a really swinging voice, you know.
What about extradition?
No, you'll be all right in Trinidad, man.
What about Montevideo?
Montevideo's Uruguay. I don't know nothing about Uruguay.
I've always fancied Montego Bay myself.
Montego Bay. The rum there is fantastic, man. But how you get on with the expedition, I do not know.
See my secretary.
I'll do that, man. Here we go.
Farewell to the High Court forever. Yes, farewell to my old pals as well. And farewell to those royal commissions, where I once used to look such a swell. Singing Turralloy, Turralloy at a day. Singing Turralloy, Turralloy, I. Singing Turralloy, Turralloy at a day. We're bound for a stretch in Long Bay.
Don't you worry about that, Sir Tuckerbox. We'll all look after you in the Caribbean.
You're a mate.
Oh, thank you very much.
We've been slightly out to lunch with a script by Tony Baldwin, Kevin Daly, Angela Webber, Adam Byrne, Lance Curtis, David Witt, Steve Johnson, Ken Matthews, Colin Bowles and Peter Smalley. It Came From Witchimulta was produced by Bob Cubbage. Script editor, Mrs. Ford of Barrel. Production assistant, Linda Hughes. Sound effects, John Farkas. Technical production, Dennis Fox and Brendan Frost. The program produced by Kevin Daly and Tony Baldwin.
Go on.
You can.
No, don't you see?
You must.
No, I'm washed up. It's no good anymore.
You have to.
No, I'm a nobody. Don't you understand? I'm nothing. I'm finished. Go on. Argue with me, for God's sake.